Welcome, listeners, to a new bonus episode of Oh My Word Podcast. Today, special treat, guest author, everyone please welcome Jenny Hickman to the podcast. Welcome.
Thank you so much.
We're very excited to have you on and to be speaking with you. And let's just dive right in. So when or how did you decide, okay, I'm going to be an author?
So when I was younger, I really loved reading. And then I got to about high school and I discovered boys and soccer. And then I stopped reading and all of that altogether. So it wasn't until I got to college that I actually kind of started reading again for fun. And my mom, we were on family vacation, and she introduced me to my first romance novel because I was bored, like, on the beach, and I was like, what are you reading? And so I picked up a romance novel, and I fell in love, as you are meant to do. And so then I was kind of like, so I had a, started to get some good ideas, and I was, well, I thought they were good anyway, and I started kind of fiddling with my own stories, and I just loved the idea of writing something that always had happily ever after. That's how I kind of got started. I mean, I wrote when I was little, but it wasn't basically until I had kind of entered college that I really started getting into writing.
Wow, and that was that a side thing that you were doing, or part of your studies was focused on writing?
No, it was not part. I mean, I have a business degree, actually. Oh. I'm actually sorry that I didn't do any creative writing or anything, but yeah, I have a business degree, and I just kind of did it for fun on the side. I had a school dream at one point, and I kind of wrote it down, and then it just kind of, I guess, spiraled from there.
Wow. Well, that's actually interesting, because saying that you have a business degree, there's always, you always see these articles for writers that's, remember, writing is a business. It's not just getting a story out there. You got to deal with all the parts that come afterwards. So is any of that kicking in now that you've actually got books out? You're like, okay, we got to figure out a marketing plan. We got to figure out this, that, or whatever. It's, nah.
Yes. It has. I have a business degree with a concentration in marketing. It's all the other stuff. It's not just writing the story, which is a lot of people think, okay, I wrote this book. That's great. But like, how are you going to let people know that it's there and it's out there? So it's how to get it in front of readers.
See, that's interesting, because a lot of lawyers also have, they'll get the English degree also because there's so much writing and like word interpretation involved in law. Maybe we got to start pushing that for writers to also get business degrees.
I think it couldn't hurt anyway.
Right. Well, so how long from when you first had your idea for the book that you have now, from when you first got the idea or first started writing it down, how long did that take to actually get the first completed draft that you're like, wow, I actually have a manuscript now?
Well, it's quite a long time. Wow. So my first book, I actually self-published, I think it was 10 or 11, or 11 years ago now, actually. And then I did a few after that. And then I got married and I had children. And then my brain stopped working for about 6 years.
Mommy brain.
Baby brain majorly.
Wow.
So I had kind of started the pan before I had my son. It was only maybe halfway finished, and then I had my daughter, and then she got a little older, and I had more time for myself, and then I got to get back into it. So it's not really fair for me to say it probably took me about 7 or 8 years to get to the point where I was ready to get it out there, but that's what the pan was, quite a lengthy process.
Wow. And that was, so you ready, you had self-published a couple novel, or one or two, or, well, you didn't specify.
There were three before, all my backlist was taken down to be reworked, but yeah, it's like self-published back in 2011, a while ago.
And what kind of publisher are you with now? Is it just a small press that you're with now, or?
Yeah. So it's more of a kind of actually an author co-op, but it's Midnight Tide Publishing, and it's a bunch of authors and editors and people who are kind of putting up fantasy and sci-fi books, and we all cross-promote each other's work. It's been fantastic. So I was with a small press that actually closed a few weeks before my original release date. That was a big headache, but that's all in my past now, so I don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, exactly. Once you get that book out there, it's easier to forget all the other traumas that come before it.
Exactly. It's just like, all right, it's there now. It's in the world. Fly free, little baby.
So the press that you're with now, that's the author co-op. So how does that work differently? Does that work differently than a regular press? Are there any sort of costs outside of marketing costs that you got to put into it? Or the system of submissions and acceptance are still kind of the same?
Well, with the small press I was originally with, they cover costs for editing and cover design and everything.
Right.
Whereas for the co-op, you're covering your own costs for everything. But then the royalties are all yours as well. Like, you don't sign contracts as far as that goes.
Right.
So it's just more of a promotional tool than.
Yeah. Right. And cover design you took care of as well, or they help you with that? Because your covers are great. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. They're so beautiful, aren't they? So
yeah.
I had a cover. So when the original publisher closed down, they had done a cover that I thought was okay, but I wasn't in love with. But I got all my rights back for the pan, and I had the rights to the cover as well. But I wanted to do something a little bit that popped a bit more. So I found a cover designer, Mila Graphic Designs, and she's amazing. And so we kind of reworked my original idea, and so I covered the cost of that as well.
Wow. So you did have input with the cover? Or you gave her the book to read?
Oh, yeah. Okay. The cover was, that was my idea, and Mila brought it to life.
Wow. Good job. Good job, everyone.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. I have this thing, though, of people on the covers. So many times, the people who I read in my mind, they don't match, and I know not everybody, like, you're supposed to find, obviously, the male lead is supposed to be attractive, and it's just, sometimes whenever you look at a book cover and I find the male lead not attractive, I'm like, this is ruining the story for me. So I said, I didn't want any people on my covers, just in case.
That's so funny. I have the same thing with covers, not exactly for the same reasons, but I also don't love seeing people on the covers, and I especially don't love it when they're looking at the reader. So some people like it when, they're looking at the camera. If it's on the cover, then I'd rather not see their face also. I don't like it as much. Or sometimes it just doesn't come out as good. It's something that can be, sometimes they're amazing and sometimes they're not. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen some that have been done right, but you know what you're saying. It's like, I just had this mental block about, for my own books, I just don't like people on my covers. So
right.
There you go. You get a rooster on the first one. So.
Yeah. Well, we should talk about, describe more about what your book's about so people can get a better idea for that. But before I forget, you do have images that you've been posting, though, of some of your characters. So who drew those images?
Yeah. So I have had some artists do some renderings. I'm always interested to see, you kind of give them the passage where you describe the characters and you kind of describe the personality and the scene, and then they come up with something themselves. And I just find it fascinating to see what people come up with.
Yep.
But
yep.
The images that I've been sharing are actually this, it's Art Reader. So I pay for a subscription to it, and you can take images and morph them, and it's addictive, to be honest. Like, I think I spent a whole week online doing this. So these are the kind of people that I imagine the characters to be in my own head. So I think if I had any artistic ability whatsoever to actually be able to do it, maybe I would have people on my covers. But I just was playing with this. It's actually really fun thing to go on, and it's free. But if you want to download things and be able to use them, then you pay the fee or whatever. It's amazing.
Right. Those came out really nice also. It's also good to help build, the story. Because I'm like, oh, I want to find out who these people are. Who is this person? What does he do? Why is she like this?
Yeah, and that's the thing. When they're not on the covers, I find them, I always see, there's a lot of, Sarah J. Maas and all their kind of characters that artists have done. And I click on all the, I find myself clicking on all the renderings and stuff that artists have done. And that's how I found out about a bunch of books. And I just thought, okay, well, just because my books don't have people on the cover doesn't necessarily mean I can't, put it out there. Because I've gotten a lot of people saying, oh my gosh, I need to pick this up because of those pieces of art, which I just find fascinating.
Oh, yeah.
Even though they're fake people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I got, for some of my first books, I did hire an illustrator to kind of the same idea. He sketched characters. I told him about the characters and he sketched them. And it was funny because it's a little bit different because it sounds like you got to make your characters look the way you want them to. But for these ones, it was... I gave him a few ideas and it came back with certain things and everyone's like, oh, is this the way you envisioned your characters? And for a lot of them, it was like, no, but I still like what he did because he was a very talented artist, so he's going to come up with something amazing. So I still use them because they were just, I'm like, this is pretty cool, actually. I could handle this. But I guess that goes back to the cover thing that, if it doesn't look exactly what you want, if it's on the cover, it's like always there. You can't avoid it.
Exactly. Exactly. If you're like, well, they're not quite what I want. You're like, this, I was like, I mean, you can change everything about these people. So I was like, I was having lots of fun. I hadn't got no writing or reading or anything done for about a week and a half.
Well, that's funny. Everything's time consuming. Everything takes a long time. Yeah. So just in brief, your book is, or your series, it's a trilogy, right? So your trilogy now is going to be, it's a Peter Pan retelling. It's sci-fi? Sci-fi and fantasy or just sci-fi?
So basically, it's Peter Pan of the 21st century, and it uses genetics to explain how people can fly and stay young forever. Oh. So it kind of just puts a little sci-fi twist on the original Peter Pan story. So it's not so much like other worlds in here, you know, the science in that aspect. It's just touching on kind of more genetics, and like there's a lot of tech that they use and stuff like that.
Right. And then for your name, that you have the Pan and the Hook, because Pan and Hook are both acronyms. Instead of being the name of someone, they're an actual acronym for, I guess, the organization and the type of people that can fly. Did I get that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So the Pan stands for people with active never genes. And then the Hook is a scientific organization trying to take down the Pan and deactivate never genes. So it's the Humanitarian Organization for Order and Knowledge.
Huh. Did that pop into your head, or did it actually take a while to come up with an acronym for that? Like, what do these letters stand for?
Well, there's a lot of acronyms in the book. So, like, I have THINK as well. There's a lot of them. So, I think the PAN actually was originally people of anonymity in Neverland, but then I really got into the genetics, and it just clicked and Hook.
Right.
I don't know. They kind of came pretty quickly because one of the doctors at Hook actually poses as kind of a humanitarian activist kind of a thing. So, it kind of just worked.
Right. Well, I'm not going to totally press, but I just want to ask as a vague general thing, do you already have your name for book three, or are you still trying to figure that out? Because I saw you posted like manuscript book three.
I do have a name for book three, and I'm actually going to be posting later today, going to let people guess, and I'm going to reveal it on Thursday. So, yeah, I do have a name. It's basically written. I'm at 75,000 words, so I've got another 25 before I hand it over to the editor. But, I know how it ends anyway, so I do have a name,
And when you first wrote the Pen, did you have in mind that this was going to be a trilogy and you saw sort of the end of the trilogy? Or as you're writing, all of a sudden it was, oh, wow, I need more books on this to tell the story.
Yeah, it was the second one, So the Pen had a bit of the Hook in it. And then that was the original. It was just one book. And then it just got bigger and bigger and bigger. And then I was like, yeah, this isn't over here. And this is the first trilogy I've ever written, and I love reading series because you just get to know you get more of the characters and the people that you grow to love. So I'm like, it's the same as a writer. Like, I'm like, I love these people. I need to tell all of their stories. So, it was originally supposed to be one book, and now it's going to be three. So, yay!
Well, that is exciting. Well, do you also have ideas to start doing either spinoffs or, like, the novella things, or once this trilogy is done, you're like, I feel like this is going to be done, and it's going to be time for new things?
I have an idea in kind of a few chapters, roughly. I don't outline, but roughly kind of I have some things written.
Yeah.
Kind of a spinoff of two characters in the book. I'm toying with the idea. It won't be right away, but there might be more spinoff things depending on if people want them, I guess.
Right.
And I have another series I'm working on now. It's with the editor that hopefully will be released in maybe November.
Yay. That's exciting. Is that also going to be a sort of a retelling, or is that a totally different genre that you're going for?
So it's complete. Yeah, it's called Kiss and Death. It's completely different. It has to do with Irish mythology and uses like witches and curses and fairies and hookah and all that jazz.
Oh wow! So going back to Pan, that you chose, or that it was in your mind to write this Peter Pan retelling. Is Peter Pan a story that you always, like, I always had a thing for Peter Pan, or this is just what kind of popped into your head?
Yeah, I have always had a thing for Peter Pan. Whenever I was growing up, obviously, the Disney movies were a big thing, and I was never into the Disney princesses. It was Peter Pan and Robin Hood were my two go-to movies. I have two sisters, so when my sisters and I would go out and play, I was Peter Pan. Like, that was it. Anybody could be Wendy, Tiger Lily, anybody else. It didn't matter. I was Peter Pan. Like, that. I just always wanted to fly. And I started thinking, wouldn't it be cool if I could create a world where that really happened? And so I did.
You're right. Okay. And then, did you go back to the original Peter Pan, Jay and Barry's Peter Pan?
Yeah. So I have a copy of it, and I read it a good few times. I think it's just so brilliant. And so what I did in my book, it's not a direct retelling.
Okay.
It's more kind of a continuation. Well, you can't actually write, like, the direct retelling, or you can't write the same thing because it's the copyright's granted in perpetuity.
Right.
In England, public domain in the States. But, yeah, so I have characters, like, I have the Lost Boys are in my book. They're different than who they are in Peter Pan. But, so, basically, my characters go to a college, Kensington Academy. That's what they call their Neverland, and they're all immortal 18-year-olds, so they have to have a reason to all be hanging out together, so they go to this college. So one of their textbooks is the original Peter Pan. So they learn, and there are secrets in that book that relate to their real life and why they talk about things like who Tink is, and they call things pixie dust, and, you know, so it all kind of relates and meshes in. So there's a lot of Easter eggs, so if you have read Peter Pan, I think you'll get a kick out of my book because there's a ton of Easter eggs in there throughout.
Oh, cool. So it's more of like a inspired, based upon versus specific, like a direct retelling. You know, I guess you still call it a retelling.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Because retelling, I never realized how big of a genre retellings are. Is Peter Pan a big one? I don't know. There's some for the princesses. There's like a bazillion of them.
Yeah, there are a few that kind of twisted tales. I think they have some. And I've seen a few. But it's not one of the big ones, definitely not.
Right. Did you look into any of those, or had you crossed any of those, or it's just like, keep the mind clear and let's do our own story?
I kept the mind clear. I think a lot of them, I read the synopsis, I read a few chapters, a few of them, they really went with the fantasy aspect and going back to Neverland and all this kind of stuff. But mine kind of brings Neverland to you in like a secret society in the real world. So I went with more of that aspect in the fantasy and magic and stuff like that.
Right. Even though they're in college, is it still YA? Is it, or does it kind of cross into NA?
So it's considered upper YA. Originally, we were talking about categorizing it as new adult, but I think a lot of new adult tends to have more intimate nature than what my book is.
Yeah.
So I'd say upper YA, the hook gets a little bit steamier, so there's still nothing too graphic in it, but I would still say 14, 15 kind of up, but that's apparently still considered YA when you read some of the stuff. I'm like, oh, that's YA? I didn't. Because they're all immortal 18-year-olds, you're just on that kind of edge of kind of crossover there.
Is Kensington Academy, where they all go, are there only Lost Boys there, or are there other people there? Because wouldn't somebody wonder how come the same kids are there for, like, ad infinitum?
So it's just for the Pan who go to Kensington Academy, but there are some people who have active Never Genes, so that means that they are young and they fly and stay young forever.
Right.
And then there are some people with inactive genes who can't fly, and they carry the dormant recessive gene, so they age and everything, but they can pose as well as far as, like, they can be teachers or they can be this and that, but it's kind of more of a secret society than an actual college, if that makes sense.
Yes. I'm sad for the people who can't fly, though, but yes. Why can they fly? Yeah. We can't all fly. There has to be the special lot that can fly. That's what we're learning today.
I know. Yeah. Even in sci-fi books, some people just aren't winners. So, sorry.
It sounds like because you got hooked again to writing through romance, specifically when you're writing, are you thinking we've got to have the happily ever after that is important to get the happily ever after in, or this one happens to have a happily ever after and maybe another one won't?
Oh, no, I have to have happily ever after. Blanket, anything I write will have a happily ever after. Sorry for the spoiler, but I promise you. The world is so crazy, and, you know, you just don't know what's going to happen. I want to be able to pick up a book. I know whenever I pick up a book, I want to know it's going to end happy, even if I get a bit stressed in the middle.
Right.
So, yeah, there will be happily ever after, despite drama and everything else that might happen.
Did you specifically want to be writing for teens, or just because it was a kind of default because of the 18-year-olds? I mean, you're not going to freeze them at 35. That doesn't sound, I guess, as intriguing. But I guess you could do that if it's an adult book. But was it specifically that you're writing for teens, so you froze them at 18, or just was you kind of fell into that?
I read a lot of YA, and yeah. I think the 18, well, it's, so I think just that age is a lot of age. Like, if you think about it, it's like when you probably graduated from high school, you get to go on your own if you went to college, or yeah. you're considered, quote unquote, an adult, and you think you know everything. It's just that age of first love. It's the age of first of everything. So for a lot of people. So that's why most of the stuff I write is YA, because I just find that time, it's just, you're not bogged down with responsibilities usually, and it's a very carefree time, and you're still very egocentric, and you're just, you know, very me, and I think it's fun to write those kind of characters.
It's fun to write the egocentric characters that are usually trying to save the world. Yeah, that they have to save the world at some point. So it's different kind of responsibilities they've got going on.
Exactly.
I saw also that you've got a lot of swag coming out now for your book also. You got the baseball cap.
Yeah.
I don't know what other swag is coming out. So is that all stuff, is this all part of the business marketing plan that you have going on? Was this something you were encouraged to do? Are you getting good responses for that?
Yeah, I'm getting really good responses, actually. So the shop isn't actually open yet. I'm going to be announcing it. It's kind of a soft opening. So like people have found it and people have bought things, but I haven't announced it yet. So because I want to make sure that everything is kind of, all the kinks are worked out. So
yeah,
I think I have a unique situation because I've created a fake college and there's some pretty memorable lines. And so I created all kinds of swag. Yeah. Like, so I have t-shirts with, you know, some of the memorable quotes on it, but also, I mean, I created a fake college. So I have their college logo,
uh-huh.
the Kensington Cockerels. So like I have their rooster, like I just have all kinds of stuff. And it's just more to create a community.
Yep.
People who are very bookish tend to, if you can find the fanatical fans that love your stuff, then I think giving them something that gets other people talking about it in some way, anything you can do, it works.
That's true. Yeah. Is this through somebody else that you're setting up this whole selling stuff, or you're going to have to take care of all that stuff?
So I found Etsy is my shop, and I did all the designs myself.
Wow.
And so there's companies out there that do print-on-demand products.
Yep.
Once I have my designs and stuff all there, when people order, they order directly from the company that does the printing, and then they ship it and everything, so I don't have to have stock, and it's been fabulous to work with, and the quality has been amazing.
Wow.
So I'm super excited to have, if nobody else buys it, I have bought it.
So. You can at least walk around with all your stuff as soon as you're out of the house again.
Exactly. Exactly. We're locked down here in Ireland, and it gives me some new clothes to wear, so whatever.
This is the new wardrobe. We're not going shopping for other clothing. We have swag. There's no other wardrobe but swag.
Exactly. Nothing's open. You're wearing the stuff, people.
Yeah. You can't really fully see it now, but it'll be interesting once someone can go into a supermarket, well, not just a supermarket, but into like a full place with a t-shirt on. Someone's going to ask, or someone's going to look it up. It's like walking billboards. It's like a street team.
Yeah, exactly. So, and it gives people, like, there's a lot of bookstagrammers and stuff who, with their pictures, and they do have a lot of swag with them, or book-related products. And I'm like, if I can give you things that have to do with my book, it's just another way of getting it out there. I try to think outside of the box with all my marketing, and that's my most out of the box so far. So we'll see if it works.
Yeah, well, I hope it does. Yeah. If you like a book, there's nothing you like better than to talk about how you liked it. So it's like when you show like the person who always has to show the photos of their family vacation, and the other person is like, why am I looking at photos of your family vacation? That's like a bookish person talking to a not bookish person about a book they love.
Yeah, exactly. I need those crazy fans who wear my stuff who want to talk about it all the time.
Well, have you got your first book's out already? So have you looked at reader feedback? Have you gotten reader feedback, or you're not looking at any? Like, we're not going to look at what anybody has to say. Just heart my pictures, and that's the only thing I want to see right now. You know what I mean? Because they always say, don't read reviews.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, even though they say never look at reviews and stuff. I do. I have a fairly thick skin. I might cry.
Yeah.
I just figure most people that I've found, maybe if there's an issue that keeps popping up, I know if one or two people say something and they don't like it, it's not for everybody, that's fine.
Right.
But if there's an issue that keeps popping up, I might learn, or I might be able to, it's like, this question wasn't answered, I've had a few people say that, or And I'm like, oh, I didn't answer that question. Or, if you get it in the next book, it's fine. But it's been overwhelmingly positive. Like I'm really excited, which is good. I keep saying, so some of my old stuff, I got some terrible reviews, and I keep saying I'm going to go online when I get some bad reviews and do a Jenny reads bad reviews kind of thing.
Yeah.
like the celebrity reads mean tweets. I'm going to take one of those things for my bad reviews.
That's really funny, actually.
Thankfully we haven't gotten those yet. So hopefully I won't be doing that for a while.
Yeah. Amen. Well, that's true also, that because they do say not to read the reviews, but you do need to get reader feedback just to know if what you're saying works. Like, I'm not asking if I'm a good writer or not. I'm asking if you got my story almost. And so sometimes when you do see something that's recurring, and especially a lot of reviewers, you have your fringe group that, you know, they either just get a hate on it, or they're just like, oh my God, I love it, love it, love it. And which is great, but doesn't give you productive feedback. But it's true that when you see somebody keep saying, you know, I found she used the word whatever so many times, could you find new adjectives? You're like, yo, do I use that word so many times? Because you hadn't spotted before. You're in your blinder world and you need someone else sometimes to call it out.
So true, yeah. It's important to get that because, like you said, you have your cheerleaders and stuff who are going to tell you that they like it even if it's crap. So it's nice to get feedback from people who aren't related to you or that don't know you, who just either like it or have something to say about it once it's constructive, I think.
Yeah, and there's always a good moment when it's like, I don't know who this person is and they read my book and they reviewed it. Wow, I have an actual audience now.
Yeah. So my husband, someone wrote a really good review, and he's like, well, do you know that? I'm like, no, that's the best part.
Yes, exactly. Yay. Sometimes you need it. And that's why also sometimes people are embarrassed to either comment on a book, you know, not specifically my book, but if someone tells me, oh, I just read this, and I'll ask, what did you think about it? They're like, oh, I'm not a writer like you, so I can't say. And it's like, you could say. You could say what your reaction to it is. You could say if you feel like you got the story. That's all legitimate feedback. Again, I'm not asking if you thought this, you know, this author is a great literary mind or something, but if you're going to say, oh, I like the book for whatever reasons, that's good feedback to give. And as a reader myself, that I can benefit from that feedback. So it's very encouraging people to be nice with reviews. Yeah.
People who are saying like, I loved your book, but I don't feel comfortable writing a review because I can't write. I'm like, and I think they see the reviews that are beautifully written, and I'm like, all you have to do is just say what you liked about it, because not everybody is going to read the big long reviews. Some people just want to slide through and say, yeah, this person liked this, this, and this. I'm like, or if you hate it, just say that has this, this, and this. At least it just gets to let people know what's in the book and what to like, or what, you know?
Yeah.
You could just get some feedback, which is good.
Yeah. And it's true also, because so many readers will look at reviews before they're going to buy a book, and there's so many options, so it's funny because it's kind of, this happens so much with all the different kinds of sites when you look at someone's reviews, like you don't know who this person is and you're trusting them for a review. But that's also why it's good to say, I really liked, you know, I loved this character. They seemed like a really strong character. So now I see, oh, if I really like strong characters that I like this, I might like this book. It's not looking for detailed literary analysis. It's just saying, I like the book because, and as a reader, I could say, oh, I do like that or I don't like that. And then I do rely on that sometimes to buy books. Because, you know, not every book is going to have the multi-million marketing campaign behind it to push it. And if I'm going to look for something else, I'm going to rely on reviews for that. So we encourage everyone to write reviews.
Yes, yes. This is what we need, is how people find out about it.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you're angry about it, just tell the author directly or just don't say anything.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But basically, I mean, I want to hear what you have to say, but also be nice to me.
Yeah, look, a lot of time goes into this, you know. Let's all, we want to be a positive community of people, please.
Exactly.
Yeah, now that we've had our public service announcement. Oh, you know, we're doing perfect on time now. So let's, not because we want to cut out of the conversation, just because we're looking at the time, we're going to wrap up. I always end off with the fill in the blank of, I love it when writers, books, publishers, editors, you know, whomever does X, and I really don't like it when they do X. So how would you fill in the blank for those two?
All right, I love it when writers write swoon-worthy men.
Okay, one second. Swoon-worthy, are there certain qualifications in your mind for swoon-worthy? He generally, usually a guy who does X is swoon-worthy, or is it just a general...
No.
Yeah.
Just, I want to just read a the character that just makes me kind of giggle and smile as I'm reading, that my husband's like, what are you reading? Why do you have to look at me? That's the kind of character that I'd like to read.
Okay.
Okay, and then, okay, so this is kind of, I'll preface it with, sometimes it works. But most of the time, I hate it when characters take someone that I love in the first book in a series and then completely screw with their arc and make them somebody completely different in subsequent books. There are exceptions.
Okay.
Like A Court of Thorns and Roses. I loved what Sarah J. Maas did with that. That is fine. But most of the time, like if I fall in love with a character, I feel very betrayed whenever something happens to them in the second book or subsequent book that doesn't seem to fit, or and I just want everybody to have happily ever after. It just kills me when it's not the two people that I think should be together. So that's just in general.
So does that include, you know, a lot of times in the first book in a series, you'll have, you know, the two characters who get together. Almost, not always, but often in the second book, there's some big fight that separates them. And then the third book, eventually, somehow they come back together again. Does that include that? Or?
Yes.
Okay, so if they're together, they got to be together.
I'm talking about an introduction of a brand new character, or a character, all of a sudden the guy is not nice in the second book, and it's like, okay, where is this coming from?
Right, okay.
And they just completely screw me up.
I hear that. And then, only because I'm thinking, I just thought about this now, how do you feel about love triangles?
I have light love triangles in my book, so I'm okay with them. I'm okay with that kind of trope. It's still in my head is like, okay, well, it has to be this person. And if it's not kind of the original person that I think it should be, then I get really depressed.
Oh, that you decide it should be. Not that the author, whomever else, that you decide it should be.
No. Just whatever they want.
Got that, everybody? Don't mess with Jenny's pick.
Don't mess with them. When they're meant to be together, they're meant to be together forever, okay?
It is true, though, because sometimes it's like the second book, because it usually happens in the second book, or often when there's a fight, it just feels like it's something that's forced, or you're just trying to create drama. Like, after the first book, when they said, oh, they're forever, we're going to love you forever, I'm going to love you forever, then the second book, you, like, make up a fight for them to have. Why do they have to have the fight? You could separate them just because they have to go, you know, I have to take care of this now, and you have to take care of this now, so they're separated without the relationship being separated, right? I don't know why there always
I'm
has to be the fight.
Yeah.
Yeah. Got it. Okay. All right, great. Jenny, thank you so much for joining us today. This was fun. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. It was great fun.
This was a bonus episode featuring author Jenny Hickman. To find out more about Jenny and her work, please visit the link in the episode notes. To keep track of Oh My Word Podcast, bonus episodes, and all the other great stuff we're up to, please follow Oh My Word Podcast on Instagram or check us out at eltenenbaum.com. Thanks so much for joining us. Catch you next time.